Begins It, everyone, and welcome to Minute 43 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and once again, Tom is still in the cooler, so he'll be hopefully back next week if Von Luger lets him out by then. Joining me today is Tyson Ferris, filmmaker and podcaster. Welcome back, Tyson.
Ahoy, hoy. Thanks for having me.
No problem. It's been a fun week so far.
Yeah.
You know, we've got some great stuff to talk about, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed when I didn't have any McQueen minutes, but you know, we got Charlie Bronson, so that's good enough for me.
Unfortunately, despite the fact that McQueen wanted to be in every minute of the movie, there are some minutes that he doesn't appear in. Sorry, it's the luck of the draw, as they say.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, minute 43 begins with Henley standing up after stealing the rocks from under the car or truck. And ends with Henley saying that they can get tiles. So as you pointed out yesterday, at the end of our conversation yesterday, he does a really nice brush off as he stands up from getting out from under the truck. Now, on the one hand, it's interesting to think about the fact that, you know, here he is in a POW camp where there's a lot of dirt.
In full dress,
wearing a white turtleneck that somehow stays white. You know, and why should he be concerned about the fact that he's getting a little dust on his uniform? It's not as if he's going to look conspicuous. You'd think that none of these characters are supposed to be walking around in immaculate uniforms. I mean, again, as we've discussed, the fact that, you know, every one of these characters jumped out of a plane at some point. You know, they should have...
Yeah.
You know, they have clothes that are torn. They should have, you know, different oil stains, something. You know, you wouldn't think.
I read it as that's just part of his character. He's particular in that way.
Yes.
That's why he's in full dress. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't have to be wearing that, you know.
That's true. Now, and also, we know that it's the summer, or it's late spring, early summer. You know, it's going to be pretty warm for him wearing a turtleneck.
Yeah, I mean, he's in that because he wants to be in it. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I think he's in getting some dust and dirt on it doesn't mesh well with him. So
right. Right, but again, if you look at other movies that deal with POW camps during World War II, whether you're talking about in the European or the Pacific fronts, most of them are usually wearing tattered uniforms. I mean, if you think of the Bridge on the River Kwai,
sure. Yeah.
If you think about Unbroken, if you think about Stalag 17, you know, it's rare to see prisoners where all of their uniforms are still intact. So this is obviously a little harder to believe, but it's still fun, you know, watching them do this.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's not, you know, it's not a work camp. So I think it tracks that, like, maybe, you know, these guys aren't toiling quite as much as your average prisoner of war.
Right.
You know,
no, I can agree with that. But again, there's still the idea of wear and tear. I mean, most of these guys probably in uniform.
Oh, sure.
You know, as we were discussing earlier in the week, you know, when they bailed out of their plane, it's not as if they grabbed their suitcase with a change of clothes or with five pairs of change of clothes. You know, they basically.
Well, and it's kind of striking to me that he would even have this uniform at all.
Exactly.
I mean, to your point, like. You know, if he got shot down, you had to, you know, this isn't what you wear when you're flying a plane. Do you know what I mean?
Like, that's true also. I actually never thought about it from that point. It's not a flight suit. You're right. It's a suit.
Yeah.
It's not a flight suit.
This is the dress uniform.
Yeah. That's interesting. Basically, Henley then walks across the way to the nearest barracks, quickly, you know, keeping the steel rods close to his legs so that no one can see them, and then he puts them inside. A hand pops out and grabs them. Then they close the windows, and nobody knows the better. But as we mentioned yesterday, there's going to be a problem when this truck actually, you know, doesn't start. No, I was trying to think of what it could be. Maybe it could be that maybe it's the rods that are under the truck to be able to store things. You know, maybe a spare tire or I don't know.
Oh yeah, it could be like supports for that where it wouldn't. And he gets them. It would have to be a part that isn't.
It's something that he. Yeah.
It's not welded or bolted because he had no tools. He's able to get these off, you know, just with his bare hands. So I did notice there's two little. There's a hole at the end of the rod. It's kind of like bent at a 90 degree, and there's like. A hole. So I wonder if it's almost something like slips over something else to kind of hang in place or I don't have a good answer, but it'd have to be something he can get off with his bare hands, which, you know, like I was saying, there's not usually extra parts on a car. And then there's definitely not things that come off with your bare hands. Like these are very, this has to be a very specific thing on this particular vehicle.
And after he passes them inside, they close the window. And then did you notice what he does? He brushes off his jacket again.
Yeah. It's a no look brush off. He like instinctively knows that there's dirt on his uniform and gets it in one go. I love it. So.
And then it actually segues into one of my favorite scenes of the movie, the whole idea of the signals. You know, for me, this is one of the most iconic things about the movie The Great Escape, is the fact that, you know, they have this signal system set up, which is such an amazing signal system, because it people who watch baseball and stuff like that, so they see signals, you know, that the coaches, you know, are signaling the players what to do and stuff like that. But they actually do that here. You know, they're signaling when the guards are coming close, or when the guards have gone away, or whatever it is. So the signals that they use here is that, you know, first they show, you know, the guy with the pipe. He looks back. He looks both directions, and then he nods. That's all he does. Yep. That's his signal. He nods. And then the next guy with the pipe, you know, the mustache and the pipe, what he does is he picks up a book and opens it. And then someone else starts, you know, sees that and starts doing his laundry. You know, in the sink that apparently they've fixed, you know, the problem of the spout water that we just had not long ago.
Sure.
And then someone else sees that and he knocks on the wall. So, I mean, these are amazing types of signals.
Which the last one is probably the most conspicuous, right? Others are not, you know.
Yeah. It's just knocking on the wall. Now, can you think of any other movie or TV show or something like that which would, I guess you could say, copies the idea of this, using signals?
Oh, well, right. I mean, there's a direct homage to this in an early Simpsons episode where Maggie's in a daycare, and basically the whole episode is she's basically the Steve McQueen of this daycare, and is trying to get her binky, you know.
I'm so happy that you brought that up, because that was one that I found. I love that. I saw that when I'm not a Simpsons fan anymore. I liked it. I watched it the first few seasons.
Sure.
And I've always remembered that episode.
It's a fantastic episode. Yep.
You know, Marge. It's an episode where Marge decides that she wants to go. She wants to work on a streetcar named Desire, and so they put Maggie in daycare, and they take away all of their
yep.
They're the pacifiers, and the kids create these amazing signals to be able to try to go and steal them back. You know, like if I remember correctly, one of the kids has like a toy that he moves back and forth. You know, another one, I don't even remember all the little things that they did, but that was such a great homage to it. There's no question about that.
Well, I think they use the Elmer Bernstein music, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Fantastic. I forgot that was the same as the streetcar episode.
Yeah.
What a great B plot. Like, I mean, that could have been the A plot easily, you know? Yeah.
Exactly. No question about that. Can you think of any other examples of movies or TV shows?
Oh.
I'm thinking of a specific movie.
That also does this.
I mean, there's a lot.
There's a lot.
There's one that's really big that came out in 2013, which utilizes it.
I don't know. You'd have to.
Okay, it's The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug.
Oh, okay.
Okay, there's the scene when they get to Lake Town.
Okay.
So basically, Stephen Colbert has a small cameo in the movie, and he's actually the first character to signal. Basically, the mayor of Lake Town sets up this spy ring to watch what's going on, and so you have Stephen Colbert start off by moving a lever, and then you have a kid run by, and then someone else sees it, and then they you know move something slightly, and then you have two fishermen that are fishing, and the two of them switch positions as to where they're fishing.
Awesome.
And the whole point of that scene is to show, you know, the spy system, and it's completely taken directly from the way that this movie does it. And sure. I found that just to be amazing. That
I've only seen those. I've only seen that trilogy once. I'll need to revisit that.
Yeah, no, I gotta admit, I only saw it twice before. Oh no, sorry. I saw that movie twice. And then when I was doing research for this podcast, then I came across that. So I went and rewatched the whole movie or the whole trilogy, just to get it all in. And I saw that, and I was just floored by the way they did it. It was just great.
And I just learned that Stephen Colbert is in the film. That's fantastic. Yes. So
yeah, he was. I remember at the time. I was, I was always watching, the Colbert Report, and he mentioned the fact how much of a fan he was of Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, and that he convinced Peter Jackson to give him a cameo, and he actually showed that clip on one of his shows before the movie came out.
That's awesome.
Where you just see him just you only see him for a few seconds. Sure. You know, obviously it's not a speaking part or anything like that, but it's just great for someone like that to be able to, you know, to be able to get that little cameo that he wanted.
Oh, yeah, and that guy's a huge Tolkien fan, so.
Yeah.
I think I've even heard him, I think I've even heard him, like, bust out some Elvish once in a while, so.
Yeah, I think he has.
Which is really impressive.
Right. Exactly. So then we move into the interior of after the guard or the informer, you know, knocks on the wall. So then they show us the interior of the barracks, and you see a group of eight prisoners standing around a stove. Now, first of all, you'd think that'd be a little conspicuous that they're all standing around there. There's too many of them bunched together there. So then Bronson. You know, Danny takes out two pieces of wood from underneath the mattress, and you see that he mentions the fact that they have perfect slats cut into the wood so that they're able to move the stove, and they put an extension on the chimney of the stove. And the whole idea is to show that they're going to keep the fire burning the entire time so that there's less of a chance that the Germans will actually notice that they're digging a tunnel underneath it. Which is quite interesting. You know, it's a fascinating idea to try and
fantastic plan.
Yeah. Later on, we see how that actually goes, but that's a separate issue.
It's very sound here. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There's no question about that. It's a good idea. But as with any movie or something, either there are always going to be ups and downs along the way. Otherwise, if everything always works, then that. That's boring.
Using the old, like what I imagine would be like a coffee can or an old fruit can or something.
A tin. Exactly.
Using that as an extension for the stovepipe, just brilliant.
Yeah, and I love the detail. I mean, you see actually the prisoner who's in the chimney. He's actually wearing oven mitts. You know, they somehow found oven mitts. You know, the things that you come across in a
it's fantastic. I mean, they'd have to have they got to feed them, so there's got to be oven mitts somewhere. You know,
that's if they're feeding them hot food.
That's true.
You never know; they might just be giving them cold food the whole time.
That's true.
And then they mention that they have two tiles that are chipped, and that they need to replace them. The response is, "Oh, we have some in the washroom in 113." Again, this goes back to what we were discussing earlier this week. Isn't that going to be noticed? You're going to take tiles off of one place and put them in another place.
Or maybe they put the Maybe they put the chip ones in the washroom, right?
Could be, but again, this is a brand new camp.
Yeah.
You know, they built this camp for them. So there's how much wear and tear you can actually show along the way.
But I think it's not so much that they're, but if they see chipped ones in the washroom, right? I think the whole point is they don't want them to notice the chip ones under the stove. Right.
Exactly.
So if they notice it in the washroom, who cares if they notice it?
It's, no, but aren't they going to wonder why they have chip, you know, why they have chip tiles there? Maybe they need to like,
but they could wonder that, but then they're never going to equate that to tiles under a stove. Right. Do you
they're
know what
gonna,
I mean?
That's true. They're not going to look at it and say, oh, wait a second. You know, there are others underneath the stove. Maybe they've actually switched them. You're right.
Maybe they switched the. I mean, why would you ever go there? Do you know what I mean?
Correct. Like, no, you're right. You're right.
I don't think anyone would could make that. Like,
that's right. That's interesting to do the switch of that. Yeah. Because as you said, if they saw the chipped ones on the floor, then they would get suspicious, and they wouldn't. You know, but if they see them on, okay,
sure,
all right, I can.
Well, and even if they get suspicious, washroom, they can investigate the washroom. It doesn't matter.
They can investigate as much as they want. Yeah. They're going to find anything.
Yeah.
What are they going to find in the end? Yeah. They're going to find, you know, chipped tiles.
Some chipped tiles. That's it. Yeah.
I guess.
So. And I love that he instantly knows where those tiles are.
Exactly.
You know, it's washroom 13 or whatever. You know, it's. And it's just like he's like an encyclopedia of
that's his job.
You know, stuff around the place. But that is his job, so it makes sense.
But you don't think that you know when decorating the camp, you know, when they brought in the decorator to deal with the camp, you'd think that the same tiles would be in almost all of them, in all of the barracks.
Yeah, it'd be like,
you know, it's not,
yeah, we have a,
it's not like,
yeah, we have a surplus of these, you know. When we sacked France, we, you know, took over a tile factory, and there's a, you know, a gajillion red tiles, you know, that we have access to. You know.
Right. It's not as if they're going to say, okay, well, in barracks 114, we're going to put red ones, and in barracks 113, we'll put some green ones because that fits in a little better with the, you know, with the decor.
Right. I mean, yeah.
So, unless the fact that the red ones were the not the standard ones, and those were what were left over. You know.
Yeah, I kind of want for my own headcanon, there's like a scene of them building this, and there's a very, you know, foppish British, you know, designer that German designer comes in. Oh yes, and here we have the mint green tiles, and this one we have the burnt sienna tiles, and this one we have the you know, just being very particular about each thing.
Correct. That would have been great. That's you know, that's something I can see Mel Brooks doing, you know.
Yeah, probably good. Oh yeah, absolutely, totally Mel Brooks. The be a great If that did exist, I'm glad they cut it. It probably didn't deserve to be in the movie.
Yeah, so. That's true. It's not in the original script. How's that?
Yeah, there we go.
All right. Well, you have anything else to minute?
Nope. I think we're good.
All right. Excellent. Do you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with
you? Reels Jaws Minute and Bad at Movies.
All right. And you can contact us by sending an email to thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our Facebook group is The Cooler. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. And you can contact us on Twitter at greatescapemxm. So, until tomorrow, tally-ho!
Tally-ho!